Well, you can say hi if you want to.
Hi, this is
Howdy.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Greg LeMond. Welcome to the VeloCast.
Nice, really nice, yeah.
Hello everyone and welcome to the VeloCast. This week we'll be looking at the very real possibility there may not be much in the way of cycling for us to enjoy this year, why the HSBC Bank has bailed on British cycling, and the frightening suggestion from Patrick Lefevre that Remco Evenepoel isn't even in top form yet. But first, Jakob Fuglsang looks set to continue his bumper 2019 with an equally impressive bumper 2020. The Astana man has defended his Ruta del Sol title and this time led the race from start to finish.
Got to say, Astana aren't shy, are they? I mean, after all the kerfuffle about Dr. Ferrari and stuff and the denials, you would have thought they would have just kind of taken a step back, maybe just kept their light under a bushel for a wee while to let any potential conflict or controversy just drop by the wayside and move on to the next news cycle. But you've got Lysenko being incredibly strong in the UAE Tour, and Fuglsang was just imperious in this race. You know, he was magnificent.
Had Astana been taken over by someone other than Alexander Vinokourov while I wasn't looking, which would be the only reason why Astana would ever be shy. So I wouldn't have thought that they would have been quiet after all that kerfuffle regarding Ferrari, which, as we said a couple of shows ago, turned out to be a bit of nothing, really.
Yeah, storm in a teacup. And you're right, Vinokourov, his response to controversy has always been just to face up to it. You know, whether it's lending someone money to buy a house and coincidentally winning Liège-Bastogne-Liège, or, you know, he's returned to the Tour after the blood doping scandals. He is a kind of face it, head on kind of guy. But Fuglsang had easily the best year of his career last year, and it looks like he just means to carry on in the same vein. Winning two stages in yellow, did a fantastic time trial in the final time trial as well. He's in great, great form for a classic season if we get one.
Yeah, well, there's a big caveat. And I'm glad you moved us away from the controversies regarding Alexander Vinokourov, because I think that's terribly unfair on Jakob Fuglsang, who, despite, of course, having his wages paid by the aforementioned Astana boss, is a rider that has, I think, done a lot to reshape Astana's image, certainly in the past couple of years. As you mentioned, having a fantastic 2019, and it's going to prove a great 2020 for him if this form continues. The one stage that I thought was absolutely superb, though, and not taking anything away from Fuglsang's fantastic win, was stage two when Carujal's Gonzalo Serrano caught the peloton napping as they took that right hand bend into the finishing town and just attacked. And by the time that they noticed and organised themselves enough to chase, it was far too late. I love stages like that.
Yeah, absolutely. He was paying attention, nobody else was, and he managed to get such a gap that by the end, they're in soft focus in the back of the photograph while he's got his arms raised. Carujal are always good value, but they very seldom get the really big wins. I mean, we've talked about the riders on many occasions when they've enlivened races, but it did put a big smile on my face to see Gonzalo Serrano cross the line first.
And to the rest of the Ruta del Sol, it's always a good race early in the season. It's nice to see a bit of sunshine. I know Australia gives us lots of that, but it's encouraging when that sunshine comes via Europe that we know at least we're going to get some in the coming months or so. But to the race itself, as I say, always enjoyable, and this one no different.
No, absolutely. The other highlight for me, actually, besides the performances of Fuglsang and the Carujal victory, was Jack Haig has been a real workhorse for his team in recent years. How often have we seen him either out in a breakaway, to negate the chances of anybody attacking from the rear, or chasing down a breakaway, or, just hanging back to help his leader. So for somebody like that, it's great to see them get a victory as well. So the Ruta del Sol is one of those rare things. It's a race that's early season that I enjoy pretty much every year, but also it hasn't changed its name. I mean, it's always been the Ruta del Sol, which makes me happy, because I find change threatening. I fear change.
Cycling commentators, journalists and podcasters are facing their own frightening future where they run out of superlatives for 20-year-old Remco Evenepoel. The De Koninck Quickstep sensation added to his ever-expanding palmarès with his second stage race victory, this time via the Volta ao Algarve.
Talking about getting old, when did all these champion cyclists become 12?
It's Doogie Howser syndrome, I believe it's called.
I was looking back. I've been watching some of the old tours with Eno, and you know, I talked the other week about how I'd been back and watched Paris-Roubaix, and Eno was roughly of ages with me, and I remember thinking, you know, he looks like a grown man when I was watching riding. You watch Evenepoel, he looks like an absolute machine on the bike. I mean, beautiful position in that final time trial, amazing to see him chasing people down in the mountains. You know, he's a complete package, he's the whole rider, and then he takes his helmet off and it's somebody for play school.
It's actually a fair point. I mean, when you think back at the likes of Merckx and Eno were 20, they'd looked like they were hewn out of rock. They looked like they were on a 40-a-day cigarette habit. They never looked 20. These guys, like Evenepoel, they look like they're out in a paper run. They don't look old enough to be professional athletes. But what a professional athlete. I mean, I know we keep talking this guy and his contemporaries up, but another astonishing race for him, and even more scary is his manager Patrick Lefebvre saying he reckons Evenepoel isn't in top form yet.
Evenepoel himself says he isn't in top form, reckons he's got 2 kilos to lose, which if he's climbing this well, being, you know, 5 pounds overweight, is just terrifying for his opponents, because 2 kilos at that point is, you know, when you're really close to the top of your form, can make an absolutely huge difference. He's being cagey about his goals, I think. You know, he's going to the Giro, but he's not talking about it's a major goal. He was given the impression that he's concentrating on the classics to come. But he can do anything. I mean, it's scary, but they're apparently already saying it in Belgium. You know, the M word. They're mentioning the next Merckx. And unlike some of the other riders who've been cursed by that epithet, and I'm thinking about maybe Eddie Bosenhagen particularly here, Evenepoel is the kind of whole package that Eddie was. You know, we've seen him chasing down Miguel Angel Lopez in the mountains. We've seen him beat, you know, people like Rohan Dennis in time trials. We've seen him use really clever tactical nous, both when he was a junior and now as he's moved into the professional ranks to win the biggest races. I said in a show a couple of weeks ago, I thought he'd deliver this year. I did not expect it all to happen this quickly. You know, he's won just about everything where he's turned up in the start line. And I think he's just building. I mean, year on year, I think he's just going to get better. There's no sense of that, you know, over-urgent drive to excel. It just feels like every year he's getting better and better. So I can't expect enough from Remco Evenepoel. I think he's going to be an astonishing talent, and we're privileged to, you know, to be watching when him, or, you know, he's racing, Woot's racing, Matthew's racing, Egan Bernal's racing. So we're in for a fantastic year. I've also got to say full credit to Dan Martin. That's the best race I've seen from Dan for ages. And even in the time trial, he didn't look quite as horrible in a time trial bike as we've seen him look in the past. So I think Dan's in for a good year.
No, I would agree with that. And interesting that we've brought up the likes of Merckx and Eno. And Patrick Lefebvre, an interview with him where he talks about how he doesn't think Evenepoel's in top form yet, was talking about how the sport has changed and how he looks at riders. I'll just take a quote from it, saying cycling has changed in recent years. Thomas and Nibali are not in top shape yet, but when you see on Twitter they've done 250-kilometre training rides in December and January, I wonder what good it has actually done. I think that's a very, very good point, that the sport has changed so much, and they maybe have a bit of an old school mentality still when it comes to looking at their season. And if we are to believe what Evenepoel is saying, he still has a kilo or two to lose, then God help his competition.
Yeah, absolutely. And with the, you know, the power of the Koninck Quickstep behind him, more often than not, I suspect he'll be that guy that goes up the road and the others work for. You know, in a team with that depth of talent, he looks like he's going to emerge as the shining star. I genuinely thought he was going to go to the Koninck Quickstep almost to serve his apprenticeship. you know, to ride in support of other riders who were still better than him, people like Philippe Gilbert, and learn the ropes, you know, have a road captain who showed him where to position himself, how to watch for the brakes, you know, how to ride the cobbles, all of that kind of stuff. But he's just, you know, sprung from the juniors, fully formed. He's got everything. Did you see Patrick Lefevre in the ad for E3 Harelbeke, which astonishingly doesn't have any naked ladies on it this year?
Well, that is astonishing given E3 Harelbeke's past record on their advertising campaigns. But no, to your question, I didn't see Patrick Lefevre. What's the Deconinck Quickstep boss been doing?
Well, it's lots of Belgian greats, you know, people like Peter van Petegem, Greg van Avermaet's in drag on it, and Patrick Lefevre has a massive moustache and is dressed up as a money man.
Whoa, talk about burying the lead. Greg van Avermaet is in drag?
Yeah, he's not an attractive woman, it's going to be said.
Okay.
Apparently they're all dressed up as characters in a Belgian soap opera, so it's a very narrowly targeted ad.
Okay. I can see this being the kind of thing that I will wake up tomorrow morning, having gone searching on the internet for as soon as we finish this, and being absolutely sure it was an acid-fueled dream. This cannot be real. Going back to Evenepoel, if I can, just for a minute, you rightly said that he looking at the Giro, but not with the prospect of it being a target and wants to look at the classics. With him now taking his second stage race victory, is the danger here that someone who could be a Grand Tour contender is facing a spring campaign on a very classics-focused team being railroaded or corralled into being a classics rider when he could be more than a classics rider? And again, I'm not insulting.
A reverse Thomas, you mean?
Kind of, yeah. A reverse, the polar opposite of Geraint Thomas.
I think the great thing about Evenepoel is he's got that complete package that I've been banging on about in this show, but he also is young enough to be able to decide what he wants to do, and maybe he wants to do everything. You know, that might be one way that he's a throwback to those earlier decades. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he podiumed at the Giro as well. You know, he's just... I find it hard to put limits on, you know, what we can expect from that young man. And if he, you know, if he does well in the classics this year, next year he might decide he wants to play in the Grand Tours. And he's capable of both, and he's young enough to do both. So all the best to him. I'm genuinely excited about watching him this year. It's going to be fantastic.
UK Bank HSBC has announced that it's taking advantage of the midpoint break clause in its contract with British Cycling. The sponsorship agreement signed in 2016 was supposed to run until 2024, but a 33% drop in profits is believed to be at the heart of the bank's decision to pull out early.
Yeah, absolutely. There's 35,000 jobs at risk in HSBC. As you say, a third drop in profits, difficult trading conditions. Going forward, you know, banking within Britain will be in massive upheaval as, you know, the Brexit process proceeds. So maybe that's an unstable element in their forward planning. Maybe they don't want to be involved in sponsorship within a country where their operating conditions may become difficult. I've seen a lot of people saying, oh, you know, it's because of Mo Farah coming out and reminding everybody about 2012 and the Jiffy bag and all that kind of stuff. I think it's nothing to do with that. I think it's purely a financial decision with the added, you know, sauce, if you like, of a wee bit of uncertainty about the British banking environment in the future. It's a big blow for British Cycling, though. You know, headline sponsor just disappearing at relatively short notice, even though they had every right to do it. You know, it was a break in the contract, which was completely clear. Must have come as a bit of a shock to the Hygiens at British Cycling, and they'll be scrabbling to find a replacement.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't see any of the recent travails at British Cycling being any kind of determining factor in this. It is more likely, as we've talked about, 33% drop in profits. You've also got difficult global conditions for banking. Not that this is a banking podcast, far, far from it. I was reading some stuff going back to October when they started announcing profit losses in the press, and they were talking about how Asia is a difficult market. You've got this trade war going on between the US and China, and now coronavirus, which is, of course, adding to uncertainty in markets around the world. So it's understandable that with that kind of loss in their profits and the potential for job cuts, that it would seem very, very foolhardy to be continuing with spending millions in sports sponsorship, as difficult for British Cycling as that is to hear. Having said that, in that kind of bit of research I was doing, I did notice the following quote. Despite the planned job cuts, HSBC said it had set aside $3.3 billion in bonuses, but that's down nearly 4% compared with last year.
Yeah, that's bankers for you, isn't it?
I'm sorry if there's any.
The one letter.
Yeah, I'm sorry if there's any people involved in the banking sector listening to this. But God, I hate banks. I'm so sorry.
I tell you what, though, the cuts have already begun to strike. Jason Kenney was tweeting, I think it was yesterday, that the British team had just been issued a World Championship kit for the week, and it's one skin suit for him. He says he's hoping for marginal stains.
Oh, he did not, did he?
He did.
I thought that was your joke added at the end, but oh no, fair enough. So this, of course, leaves British Cycling struggling. This is an Olympic year. It couldn't have come at a worse time. Do we see a new sponsor being able to be found quickly, or are things like Brexit going to play a significant role in British Cycling struggling to find a replacement here?
It's hard to see anybody just slotting in, isn't it? And also, if you are a major sponsor and you're going in, the one shop window you want is the Olympics, and you've got the IOC and members of the IOC already saying that depending how the coronavirus, there's a theme developing to this show, isn't there, plays out, the Olympics may just be cancelled in Tokyo.
I said,
you know, you look at the map of the spread of the disease, Tokyo is a big red dot on that John Hopkins map.
Yeah, I said this a couple of weeks ago. I read a piece online saying that while the Chinese government have been, I'll put this euphemistically, vociferous in their attempts to control the virus, it was looking like Japan was becoming somewhat of a hotbed. And my immediate thought was, well, there goes the Olympics, because you can't have that amount of international travel coming to a place which is, as I say, a hotbed for the spread of this dangerous virus at this time. Which brings us very, very neatly on to what is another big story and concern for the cycling world, with new cases of coronavirus being reported worldwide on a daily basis. Questions are now being raised as to the wisdom of holding sporting events, as we say the Olympics, which draw large numbers of people into close contact with each other. And with Italy currently being the centre of the epidemic in Europe, RCS director Mauro Vegni has said that races such as Strada Bianca, Tirreno Adriatico, Milan San Remo and the Giro d'Italia itself could be at risk of cancellation.
Yeah, Italy's cases are growing exponentially. I mean, literally, they're just new cases all the time. Deaths, the last time I looked, were up to 10 or 11. And I'm of the opinion now that Milan-San Remo is 50-50 at best. You know, this isn't going to end very, very quickly, and Milan-San Remo is not far away. The Olympics, they're talking about cancelling it. More importantly, I've had to cancel my Chinese holiday this year, which is, you know, absolutely desperate. It's far worse than missing a monument or whatever. But joking aside, this is a very, very infectious disease. It's got a 2% mortality rate, which is actually reasonably significant. You know, originally they thought that we were only seeing a fraction of the cases being tested and being declared, and the real number of infections might be much larger, which would drop that mortality rate. But I see more and more of the scientists who specialise in this are thinking that it might actually realistically be about 2%. China has managed to shut down the spread of the disease within China, outside Hubei, the province where it started. There's now a decrease in the new cases every day. But the way they've done that is by, well, frankly, draconian measures. You know, Alex, my son, who's in Chongqing, which has been really stable for weeks now, you know, a city of 30 million, it's got less than 600 cases, it's only had six deaths, and five of them were, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. But the way they've done it is essentially just shut down the entire economy. You know, Alex is, and all of the households in Chongqing are only allowed to have one member of the household leave to do shopping. They're only allowed to do that every 2 days. So Alex is stuck in his flat for at least, you know, 1 day every two. They're taking their temperatures when they go into supermarkets. And you can do that if you're a totalitarian state. You know, you can make a rule, and if people don't, you know, if they don't believe it and they don't, you know, go along with it, they're in trouble. You know, they're doing things like taking lorry drivers' temperatures when they're out on motorways. If their temperatures are high, they just have to leave their lorry. You know, it's just left. Now, nobody is going to be able to do that in a state with more liberty, you know, more democratic outlook, laws that are slightly less draconian, which means if it does get established, and we're starting to see it be established in places like Lombardy, new cases, first case in Greece was today, Japan, South Korea, North Korea, of course, say they've got none, but, you know, that's what you expect. If it gets established out with those draconian controls, it's frankly terrifying how quickly it could spread. So there comes a point where sport is not the most important thing. Public health is. So whilst we might mourn these races, we have to look at the bigger picture and, you know, try and preserve life, try and stop infection. And if the hard decisions have to be made, I've got to say I'll support them, although it's going to make podcasting really hard unless we make a quick shift to a virology podcast.
Well, it's either that or banking at the minute, one of the two. And to look at the specifics here, I mean, dependent on how the virus itself is contained or otherwise, you would think that the zero would be okay. It's significantly far off into the future that things could turn around. But as I say, that there is a huge caveat there. But all the other races, I just can't see going ahead. Strada Bianca's in 10 days' time. Tirreno Adriatico, 2 weeks from today. Milan San Remo itself is in 24 days. Now, while Evgeny is saying the one he fears for the most is Milan San Remo due to the number of cases in Milan itself, I don't see how he or RCS can guarantee that fans going to, say, Strada Bianca aren't from infected areas. He just simply can't. And also, he can't know whether people would subsequently carry the virus should they be infected. So if somebody from Milan happens to go to Strada Bianca, is carrying the virus and was unaware of it, they might pass it on to X number of people who then travel back to wherever they're from, maybe even across the border into France or Switzerland. And so it goes on and on and on, visits their elderly relatives and they're infected and don't actually manage to survive the illness itself. So with these races being at such close proximity to where we are now, I can see them, never mind Milan San Remo, the furthest away, I can certainly see Tirreno Adriatico and Strada Bianca not going ahead, which is awful for us as cycling fans and indeed, as you rightly point out, podcasters. But you've got to support the greater good here. You've got to support the real risk that people are in. Certainly Italy at the minute, but that will, of course, likely spread to other areas in Europe. It's going to be a very, very difficult time for sport in general and events in general, never mind just us in cycling.
Yeah, in fact, you've hit the nail on the head there. Quite a few of our subscribers are medical folk. We've even got a couple of virologists, actually, and I've been chatting to them about the prospective China trip.
I thought you were going to say I've been chatting to them about the prospective for a replacement podcast.
Well, I mean, I think it's time to start that guitar podcast we've always been talking about, mate. In essence, what they've said is Alex is as safe as anywhere in the world due to the draconian measures that I mentioned. You know, China have really managed to contain the thing within Hubei largely. And by the very act of visiting them, I'd be putting them at more risk for the reasons that you just highlighted for racegoers. You know, I'd be travelling through busy airports. I'd be travelling through areas where the infection maybe isn't quite as well controlled. I'd be sitting in a train breathing that recirculated air and a plane breathing that recirculated air. So it's entirely possible that I could turn up at Chongqing Alex has been completely healthy, and I'd be, you know, I'd be the vector for him to get infected. And if you look at that for one person, for me, and then think about the number of people who stand by the roadside at races, who move through the major, you know, transit terminals, you know, the train station at Milan, all that kind of stuff, then the risk is likely just going to be too high. And civic responsibility has to come before that desire, which we all have, to watch these great races that we all love. So, I mean, you look at that picture from Getty Images of Mauro Vegni, he looks like his dog's just been put down.
Yeah.
And you can actually, you really feel for him, because these are the focus of his year, and he realises the importance of the public health concerns. So, you know, let's be thinking about the organisers, let's be thinking about the race, the folk who want to race, all of the ancillary workers who maybe rely on the income. But before all that, we have to think of the public health.
And sticking with the knock-on effects of coronavirus, Wout van Aert has decided to race this weekend's Omloop Het Noisblad. The Jumbo-Visma rider didn't have the event on his calendar, but has decided to take to the start line due to the concerns that we've just talked about, and specifically Milan-San Remo's possible cancellation.
Yeah, I mean, Wout van Aert, we talked about his heroic chase last year in Strade Bianche. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that it was one of his early season targets. But I'll be delighted to see him in the Omloop. It's a race which we love. It's the start of our preview then review cycle for races, you know, as close to the day they happen as can be possible, and that'll be for premium subscribers. So just adds to the thrill of the upcoming race. But Jumbo-Visma are thinking ahead. You know, they want him to get some racing under his wheels, and have seen that the big objectives for early season are more than likely going to be cancelled. So I'm glad he's there. I'm just sad for the reason.
Yeah, and speaking of those premium shows, last week was difficult to fill because there was next to no news. This week we are curtailing it slightly short because we don't want to bombard you too much with us talking. John and I will be back on Friday to preview Omloop, and as he mentioned, immediately after the race, or as soon as is possible, to talk about what happened.
Before you go on to close the show though, Scott, I want to do a final pimp for the Velocast 10th anniversary cycling kit made for us by Calas. I'll be placing the order next week, and after that it'll be about 6 weeks before the kit hits my doorstep. I can then get it posted out to you. Visit velocast.cc, you can see the options that are open to you. There's a drop-down menu to allow you to select the type of garment, and you're going to love it. I mean, Calas stuff is amongst the best in the world. We've decided this year to go with some pro-level kit, which is expensive, but really exactly what the pros wear, as well as our standard kit, which was already great. So visit velocast.cc. Fantastic design from Scott, which references our original Velocast cycling jersey from nearly 10 years ago. And you'll get it in time to, you know, to go for a ride, because there's no racing to watch.
Or alternatively, you get it in time to put in a frame, put in your wall, because everyone's quarantined and you can't go for a ride. But it'll look good. Thank you for joining us today as we discuss the ridiculously redoubtable Remco Evenepoel. John and I will be back on Friday, as I said, to preview this year's Omloop Het Noisblad, and we hope you can join us for that, the next edition of the Velocast.